mornings at Saturday mornings at 6 a.m.
This is what I'm saying. I mean, find a time, yes, because you have to get your grass cut and so forth. But I don't think that at 2 or 3 o'clock in the day, especially in neighborhoods where elderly people live, that that kind of jamming and noise really should be really taking place. I don't know. I personally feel, and the lady was very upset that she rang me and spoke to me about it.
It's very difficult, though, because you're also trying
to whack.
Yes, but you're also trying to deal a delicate balance with the artisan who may be working during 9 to 5, and then he only has weekend to do his work. And therefore, whether you choose a Saturday or a Sunday, that will be a little difficult for him. And then what about the artisan who does that 9 to 5? You tell me I can't do work at 2:30 in the afternoon. This is my job. I came here to do some masonry. I came here to do some, you know, so consider that that is what some neighbors can do. They can let, and that happened in my neighborhood, person say, well, we have some men working by us for the next 2 weeks. So that if you do have an elderly person in the neighborhood, you can take them somewhere else because they would, you know, be...
Well, Lisa, it goes back to what I say. Respect, reverence, communication. Because, yes, I agree the artisans have to work when they can work. I'm not disputing that and saying that they shouldn't. But I'm saying we cannot let all the horses get out of the stable and the country run amok or out of whack, because then everything then is okay. So I do agree that something needs, if it's in a neighborhood, that they come together and let these, you know, because you have to always think of the elderly, especially.
Yeah, there must be consideration.
And if we say we're going to be a caring society going forward, I really do think that we need to look at those, you call it, paying attention to fine detail, Lisa.
Yes.
And that's my take on that.
And they're useful concerns. You've raised some pretty interesting subjects that should be considered. I believe that the persons in the tourism policy space should consider home hospitality as a way of bringing the authentic.
It works in my time.
And I did hear, believe it or not, I did hear the head of the BTPA a couple months ago on air talk about the authentic experience, and I'm sure they have tried a few things in conjunction with one or two hotels, but I'm not sure that home hospitality is one of those products. Yes, I'm not so sure. I can't speak for sure.
No, it wasn't, Lisa, because that's why I brought it up.
Okay.
Because I do think the time has come that we have to go back to a lot of basics.
Okay.
And until we do that and look at those things, we're going to throw everything out the window.
Yes.
You see, so
good suggestions, though. I really
share that with you today.
Yes.
Thanks so much. And have a wonderful day.
You too. Be blessed.
You too.
This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning, Down to Brass Tacks.
You want to hear you?
How you doing? Well, yourself?
Okay, fine.
Okay.
Cognizant that it's the hurricane season as well, I find it's unbelievable that the last administration had gone and left Barbados exposed to any upcoming disaster, like hurricanes, etc. Right? By the 21st of July, we learned that a team from SEDIMA, which comprised of the executive director, Ron Jackson, his deputy, Elizabeth Riley, and planning and development manager, Andrea Grosner, paid a courtesy call on Mr. of Home Affairs, Edmund Heaton. Jackson urged the government to reinstate Barbados' National Catastrophe Fund. He said Barbados can't rely on the Caribbean Risk Insurance Facility in the event of damages or loss being experienced following a natural disaster, but one that it should not be seen as a last-minute resort. The executive director told the minister that previously Barbados was triggering funds for non-catastrophes like Storm Matthew. He said Barbados needs to look at its triggering point, and also reminded them, you don't want to claim for rainfall and rain damages. Jackson advised that Barbados need to adjust its policy to reflect the trigger and keeping with losses likely to be sustained. The Deputy Director, Elizabeth Reilly, explained that the CIS was a perimeter trigger which had no relation to the impact sustained. She gave an example of Dominica, which received a payout of US $19 million, which sustained US $1.3 billion in damages. So I'm struggling a little bit because the tremendous feedback, but I guess I get the message over. Right, that's my whole point there that I'm saying. I could not believe that this last administration left Barbados at the risk of finding hurricanes and disasters. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the point that I really wanted to bring over.
And this is because of the fund, the fund.
Yeah.
Is it the undercapitalization of the fund that is the issue?
Yes, that's the un. That's the point that what Mr. Jackson was trying to get over. He said it's a weird state because that even like he spoke about the one was the little rain. That they had.
That who had?
He was saying that you should.
Hmm? Which rain? You said the little rain that they had. You were referring to the fund, what?
It was one of the. Let me see which one it was. Matthew. Oh. He mentioned Matthew. He specified Matthew.
Okay, 26.
Right. They got the government received $3.4 million for that.
Barbados government? The Barbados government?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the one with the White Hill, they received $2.5 million. But in the case of Tumas, they received $17.1 million. So I guess that was the catastrophe fund then. But now they're only dealing with the risk insurance. And as the lady from the gave the example in Dominica. You're on the insurance. So you only get a little small percentage of what the real damage
could be. Yes. Mm-hmm. Some of that is and I take your point that some of these funds look undercapitalized.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why I urge homeowners to do some of what they can do in the pre, as opposed to wait until a government payout in the post. Mm-hmm. Because if you, good example, Trinidad just suffered a 6.9 on the Richter scale shock. And one of the members of the disaster community actually was heard opining that he expected more damage given the rigor with which that 6.9 impacted. And what it said to me was something very positive. Maybe the structures were properly in place. we could have had far more damage had they not been in place. And I think kudos should then go to the well, you call them, could be engineers, the structural work that was done on a lot of these buildings, so that in the event of an impact of that sort, that the impact is not as large. So the preparedness and the putting yourself out of harm's way, so that when harm comes, you're not in such a bad way. And that's where the onus then lies on the homeowner, on the business, so that business continuity can easily be sorted. But I hear where you're going, because then there's a broader and a more macro role for the government to ensure that in the event that there isn't an impact, that there is proper support of impact, any form of disaster, that there is funding that is quickly accessible, so that we can, you know, rectify some of the challenges. Because as you know, like in the case of Dominica, there were many scenarios that could not have been avoided given the large impact that took place.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Yourself?
I am all right.
Good.
Last time I spoke to you about the tin. The tin on the machine. And about 2 weeks ago, I saw...
I'm not hearing you well, sir.
About 2 weeks ago, I saw an article in the paper by the police saying that they didn't have all the control over that.
What are you speaking of?
Huh?
Last time you said you spoke to me about...
The tint on the windshield.
Tint? Oh, you...
Yeah, the tint.
Okay.
Since then, I think my minister came out with it, and he said that you guys should read. I don't know. I get no feedback from you. Hello?
Yes, sir.
Anyway,
do you have your phone on speaker?
No.
Okay.
I would like to hear them... or city police respond on this loud exhaust, these big mufflers they have in the car, and those thick horns the PSV vehicles have on. I would like to hear them deal with that as well.
Okay.
Alright. Anyway, I don't know how it's going, so I'll talk to you another time. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning. You're on the air. This is Down to Brass Tacks. The time is now 11:08 on today, 23rd of August, 2018. Hi, good morning.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning.
Morning, sir.
How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Right, okay. I'm a first caller.
Good to hear you.
Yes, please. Thank you so much, hon. I call them because I want... public and everybody to know. Okay. The credit union supposed to be there to help poor people. Okay. I self-employed and I've been into them to get a loan. Okay. They asked me for all the papers and all sorts of things.
Yes.
I carry them and I give them. Even my book, I took them to the accountant.
Mm-hmm.
But I had all them up to date. So he went through them and he told me, well, I didn't even have to go through them because they are correct. Anyway, he did them up and he typed them up and he signed them. Okay, I took them back to the credit union.
Mm-hmm.
The credit union now told me that the guy is supposed to be a registered accountant.
Oh.
I went back and I asked him if he's a registered accountant. He asked me what that is.
Yeah, because the term, you mean certified, a chartered accountant.
That's, yes, please.
Yes, okay.
I've been back there and he told me no.
Right.
Okay, so I asked him. So they never explained it to me, what is this registered, this chapter or what it is.
Right, the chartered accountant.
Right, yes. So what I did know is I went back to somebody else, and they told me $1,200 for each statement I want. So I got to get 3 years, not 2018. It has to be from...
Right, because it's a full calendar year in order for them to show. So
yes,
it has
ma'am.
To be 2017, 16, or 15.
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, it is that it doesn't make any sense. I got to go and pick up and pay 12 by 3. That's $1,800. I said, where do I get $1,800 from to pay it?
12 by 3 and 1800.
Sorry?
You said 1,200 by 3.
12.
Right.
Sorry.
That's $3,600.
Yeah, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Then somebody charged me $3,500.
And it is, and all you're asking for is what? You just want certified copies of your statements?
Yes, please.
Okay.
And the credit union refused everything I carry.
So the bank, your bank statements wouldn't have been sufficient over a period of time to show?
Yes, please. Would they have everything there, ma'am? They got access to everything.
I think what the banks, I'm not trying to speak for them, sir,
mm-hmm.
but they're trying to ensure that the risk profile, they're looking at your risk profile to ensure that you, they're trying to reduce their risk so that if they do give you a loan that you don't run off.
Yes.
And not be able to honor your commitments.
Yes,
and, I think you're making if that is where you're going, the onerous expectation on persons who fall within the entrepreneurship and small business category, sometimes that is a little too high. That expectation is a little too high given the costs for you fulfilling the request that they make.
Okay.
And that is not a new thing. A number of persons in this community, I'm a part of it, have indicated that they have challenges with either sourcing extra finance, etc. Have you considered anything other than the credit union, or have you?
Well, I was a member of the credit union for years, and I had a loan with them already, and they didn't went through none of this thing.
You know, I can go and borrow $5,000 to go to Miami and spend it.
Mm-hmm.
But and if I want to borrow $5,000 to set up a small business, the stakes are different.
Yeah.
Or if I want to borrow $100,000 to purchase a vehicle, blam, I can get. All I need to do is just submit three statements. Nothing that needs a chartered accountant's sign off. And it is unfortunate. You are making a pretty valid concern that has been raised on numerous occasions, the expectations of persons who are self-employed. But I would encourage you,
mm-hmm.
you can shop around as well and see if you can find a chartered accountant. I don't think that the prices are significantly different, but your same accountant can also assist you if you have been giving him the business for quite some time. I'm sure he should be able to put in a word for you to get yourself sorted.
Well, he tried his best.
Mm.
But they're still saying that you're supposed to have this person that registers to this account.
Yeah, the persons who...
But they have my money. They're asking you to bring and save your money with them. And
okay.
Then this is the problems that we poor people get in.
Okay.
And there's nobody who there want to come out and say nothing.
I'm sure people talked about it. Trust me. People have spoken about it.
And still nothing and do about it? Oh. I've been to... Okay. I used to bank with another bank. I could call the bank name.
No. Please don't.
Okay, thanks. Okay. And I went to the other bank yesterday. The other bank told me, go and get your money and come.
Okay, and that's the power of the customer, the power of the consumer. You can choose, if a bank, I don't want to be the one to make the recommendation, but another bank who make sure that you know all of what the expectations are, because they may tell you, yes, come and bring your money to me, but then when you're going through the process, they may still want the very same three.
I went and I sat down yesterday with a loans officer,
mm-hmm.
and I spoke to him. He went to his supervisor, mm-hmm. and his supervisor told me it's not a problem.
Well, you covered then. You only really called then to expose the credit union, who should, as you said, who should be looking out for the interests of the small man.
Yes, please.
Okay. Thank you so much for your contribution. I thank you for that contribution. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Gail.
Good morning.
Yes, I'm getting a seat. My voice is coming back to me.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I hear noise. Yeah, Ms. Gail, I'm hearing a lot of things that I don't understand. Now, I don't want people to say that I don't understand them because I'm a Democrat. I believe that I'm fair. Now, I'm told that all members of Parliament have to declare all of their own and, you know, property savings, etc. Can you help me? Who is responsible for that in seeing after it?
Is that finalized, though? I'm not so sure that is fully passed and the expectation is there and there's somebody to police that. So I'm not sure who or where you read it that gave you that impression that it was finalized.
No, well, even if it's not finalized yet, you know how it be done?
I just told you it's not final, so I wouldn't know.
So you wouldn't. Okay, then I'll move on. Now, over the last couple of days, there's a lot of discussion dealing with Mr. Jones and Mr. Mears. Because
Mears.
Of the two positions that they have taken. One a secretary and one employee with medical university.
Who's Mr. Mears? I'm familiar with the one with Mr. Jones.
Mr. Mears is the gentleman, the secretary of the Democratic Labor Party.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I was hearing voices like Mr. Humphrey, Miss Cattle, Mr. John King, and Mr. Rowe commenting about this issue, I would give them a break because they are young politically. But when I have persons who was involved in politics for years and being on cabinets and did things like this one, a gentleman, a member of parliament, resigned and became the chief justice. Persons that was there when that happened should not question anything about Mr. Jones. They're far apart. You can't even think of comparing them. So I will let those who was around in the past cabinet that made that one decision, there are many.
But it happened in a month's time, or 2 months' time, or it was 2 years after 2 years. How long did it take?
Listen, this is what I'm saying.
No, it does matter. You just said you know a man who resigned and then became chief justice.
A gentleman.
And yeah. My simple question to you is, within what time frame? Because I did hear an argument about...
This is what I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
The position of chief justice is too high an office for someone to be a member of a political organization, especially sitting in the House Assembly, and be given that job.
After 2 years?
I don't mind if it's 2 years, 10 years.
So you don't think it should happen? Okay.
That is why when I started my conversation with you, I told you if I just hear it from Mr. Humphrey or one of those young candidates, I would give them a break.
So what about the opposition senator who raised it?
You mean Mr. Farley? Well, I said, Lord, I thank heaven for him. That is all I will say about that right now. But I thank God that we got a man like him that could speak freely without like being, I find.
So he raised it. So my question to you is, what about him? You just said that you would have wanted younger persons in the current administration. You would have expected.
He raised it just like, I am raising it.
The matter with Mr. Mears?
The political people that I'm talking about that raise it are persons that trying to make mileage out of something that to me don't make sense.
Okay, so it's better something that's raised by the opposition.
No. What I'm trying, I'm trying to be clear. I'm trying to explain to you that if someone have done something that the whole of Barbados, no, don't get me wrong, the appointment and not being a bad, in other words, we can't question the person who was given the Chief Justice job that he did anything that he could question.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that he did a bad
job. I feel
job
you,
and,
yes.
And things like that.
Yes.
I'm dealing with the principle of to take a sitting candidate, member of a party, and given that top job. But then come down and question. Just a gentleman working at a university. Just at a university. That is that. Can I move on?
Sure.
Now, I heard David Commissar, and I want to know if I heard right, so you can help me. Did Mr. Commissar say that anyone from the Caribbean and Haiti entering Barbados have 6 weeks stay and they could work without a weapon?
No.
He didn't say that?
No.
Help me, what he said.
He was referencing those persons who fall within the contingent right category, and that is really a benefit afforded to spouses and children of a worker, of a legitimate worker who is a non-national. So let's say a Trinidadian gets a job in Barbados and he's here for 5 years. His wife.
Oh, get 5 years. Wait. No.
I only chose a figure. What if it is 1 year? I'm sorry. I'm just choosing a particular year, a number of years. Okay. So what if he's here on an assignment? Let's say he's given the job of COO of Hilton Barbados. And mind you, one of our Barbadians has been in Trinidad working as COO since 2013. So his children and his wife can benefit, but I want to talk. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to take you off in any way at all. I'm simply saying that what Mr. Commission was referring to is the matter of contingent rights and the benefits therein afforded to both the spouses of the worker and the children of the worker.
But Miss, excuse me, I don't know if I'm wrong. For all the years that was there, I know a person who came here from Trinidad, Guyana. We have a gentleman who is on all types of boards now. He came here that way years ago.
Came here which way? Under contingent rights? Because it didn't exist before.
Under contract. And work here for a year or two. And the children benefit, go to school, went to school. That is what I understand from Mr. Commissar.
So what do you understand?
I'd like to listen to it again. Because it's a little confusing to me.
But first of all, I didn't hear what you heard. I didn't hear what you heard. So the clip that I may be referring to may be different from the clip you're referring to.
The way I understand it, and I hope I'm wrong,
mm-hmm.
that anyone, carpenter, mason, domestic worker, etc., arriving in Barbados is allowed 6 months stay. But the X amount of money they should have to take care of the 6 months. But they could work before the permit. I want to know if that is so.
Oh, I would have to do some reading on that. From my understanding, I did spend 9 years in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Foreign Trade, and contingent rights, believe it or not, was one of the matters for which I had responsibility in the latter part of my tenure at the ministry. and the movement, the benefits that we were articulating on behalf of the region, members of the region, was that the beneficiaries of persons who are in receipt of a contract, a permit, or whatever, that their spouses and children can go to school. But that the issue is not the going to school, is that the wife or the husband of the spouse can work and not be waiting to until the particular tenure of their spouse is finished. But if you are speaking about the other matter, which is not contingent rights now, you're speaking about whether CARICOM nationals can move across Barbados, across the region. When we go to a CARICOM country right now, and we are a university graduate, we are an artisan, a nurse, falling in certain categories. There were five categories up until 2016, the last I heard. I don't know if there has been an amendment to that, but you can go and work in the Caribbean freely across the region, providing, of course, that you have received a permit. But that you've received a job, or you've been told yes, you can come and work. And that's a little different from what you mentioned just now, that that there are many people across the region who've come here and their children have gone to school. That has never not worked. So that's not all that contingent rights is about.
Now,
children can come here, they just have to pay a little bit more to public and primary school. But children can...
Before I go, because I don't really believe in this free movement thing right now.
Oh, you don't?
No, I don't. Because I believe to be able to move freely in the Caribbean...
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell a gentleman, a carpenter, for instance, living in a particular country, I'm not calling the country's name,
mm-hmm.
and with the real structure that they have in that country and the exchange rate, that if he arrives in Barbados for 3 weeks vacation, that you can tell him he could stay for 6 months, you think he's going back? Because it is easy to say. I have a friend that told me directly. He saw a gentleman found a bank card with some money in it. And the man threw away the money and went over the bank card because the value of the money. You can't have free movement in a country where in one country is 160 to US dollar and in the next country is 2-1. You can have problems. You can have a country.
But right now, even before you go any further, Barbados has... Not Barbados, I keep saying Barbados, but the region has known movement, and I say free, in inverted commas, for a long while. What the CARICOM institution, what the body of CARICOM is really trying to do is to regularize the movement to facilitate not just the free movement of capital, etc., but free movement of people. That has been the one that has lagged behind, but the people started first, you know.
But what I'm saying, we know that. But I'm saying, when you have a country like Trinidad that has manufactured a lot of money and things,
and manufacture money?
Barbados, that ain't have a lot of money, but got the exchange rate. Mm-hmm. You can find other islands that things are tight and the money rate. They can try to get to those two countries. It is ABC, so it is not a level playing field. So free of movement, you can find that people go into the country whereby, and you can't blame them. I left Barbados the next time here too. Because I wanted to better my life. So you can't get best of people moving, but the law got to protect the country too.
Your suggestion, if I'm clear, is that the 6 month stamp in the passport is not a positive thing because it would encourage. No, but sorry, the 6 month stamp in the passport can lead to challenges because persons may take advantage of that 6 months and not leave the country?
It could lead to challenges. Before my vision issue, just over 2 years ago, I spent all my time in construction. It is an issue. It is a problem. And they have people who speak, believe that because somebody under pressure to leave and come here, they could put them in a list 6x8 and give them a job at 150 a week. They don't understand that that person have a goal. And in about 2 or 3 years, that person is going to be under that condition. So when you open the gate, that people come in, believe you could give them small money and put them in a little small place, it don't work.
Wait, so you've changed the subject now. You've gone on to the treatment of those persons.
It's too small a country for what people call free movement. There's a lot of them between free movement and free stay.
What I would tell you, though, is while you are a proponent not for free movement, there are several persons in the region who are on the other side of the coin. And if we were to look at the economy of the Caribbean and not the individual economies, because we are all sovereign states, etc. If we look at the economy of the Caribbean and we look at the comparative and competitive advantages that each of these countries hold, then I'm sure that if one country may have something that is a little more drawing to others and you allow them to come and pass through, they're not going to just stay in Barbados, you know. If you look now and look at the economy generally and look at, put it in segments, meaning the Caribbean economy, look at Guyana now seeing 5% growth. And just a couple years ago, there was people were leaving and coming to Barbados when we had the growth.